This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means. And I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert extrovert thing. And some people, you know, like they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away. And, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened, but it can be tough to deal with. And also one of the things is like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/iFanboy.
The Vietnam War, it's over.
Your job's just begun.
A new HBO original limited series.
Welcome to the world of spycraft. Strap in.
From executive producers Park Chan-wook and Robert Downey Jr.
What are you concealing?
Based on the Pulitzer Prize-winning novel by Viet Thanh Nguyen.
What if I told you that I was a communist spy?
How did you become this?
The Sympathizer, streaming April 14th on Max. Subscription required.
This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 770, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands and wearing their masks. It's been 1 year.
1 year.
Welcome to iFanboy Pick of the Week, episode 770. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and he's back. It's my co-host, Josh Flanagan.
I haven't taken a week off on the show for so long. It feels like it's been 2 months since I did this show.
It was exactly weird. A year ago was the last time you missed a show.
Well, that's not a bad attendance record if we're doing it like elementary school did.
Do you feel like you're centered? Do you feel like you had your thoughts, you went out into the woods and thought about things and came back?
I felt like that at the time. Mm-hmm. And then when I returned, I felt the same as I had before I left, other than I was a little more sore. That, and I have comic street that I did not read last week. So now I have homework.
Well, while you do that, I'll tell the people that we are iFanboy. Every week we read a bunch of comics and one of us picks one they like the best. We call it the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We talk about other books. We talk about the patron pick. Maybe listen to mail if we have time. Well, we have some fun. And here's a spoiler warning. This is a review show. Josh, you had to pick. And last week, the week you missed, I had 25 books on my pull list. This week, I started off with 6.
Yeah.
And then I eventually hunted and pecked, and I got it up to like 11 or 12. But
I did the same. I had the same sort. I just haven't, those 25, haven't read those yet. But yeah. This week, yeah, I kept adding stuff on, trying to find things. And what happens here is, like the 90s Chicago Bulls, we're going to call it the first run, the first three-peat. King and Black Thunderbolts, number 3 was the pick. And it wasn't until the very end. And on the very last page and panel, there was a group shot of the team and they're holding up the dead corpse of the sentry, and I was like, I don't know how the symbolism of that in all of this, like, comics can't escape me. It's absurd.
I kind of loved the Weekend at Bernie's scenario with the sentry's corpse for this, and the fact that they had to give him suspenders to keep his torso attached to his legs. And
it was,
you're right. That final panel, I did end up looking at it a long time It's a good shot. I loved all the body language and everything, but the holding up the Spencer's corpse by his hair.
And the pale face with the droopy features. And I, like, at first they were making like a joke about it. Like, the beginning of it is she has to go, Star has to go and find the other half of his body because we saw the bottom half. And I didn't really know where it was going to go. They just cart his corpse around the whole time. And I thought, oh, he's going to get, they're either going to blow something up or he's going to get reanimated or whatever. Nope. Right. Totally weakened in Bernie's too.
Well, the thing is, he's a bomb. That's what they say, right? He's he's got all the energy stored in him, and so they're going to use him to blow up Null, I guess is what it is. But that doesn't end up happening. He ends up just being part of the team. Question for you.
Yeah.
There's a scene towards the end where Taskmaster is talking on the phone to Wilson Fisk.
Yeah.
And he pulls a face off. And throws it in the water.
Yes.
Or wherever he throws it. So are they saying that's not his face?
I think that is the case. I think that it's funny because we've been looking at him the whole time and he's got basically this Steve Rogers thing going on. And I remember thinking about it at the beginning of the series and thinking, that's kind of odd. He's a handsome bloke. And I don't know what he actually looks like. I feel like he showed up.
Have we seen his face in the other book?
I know we've seen his face in books. I think it is a mistake to do that. And I think that this book knows that and is rectifying it to a certain extent.
Well, what I liked about it was it harkened back to the days, and the days being sort of the 80s and a little bit of the 90s, where you had a lot of characters whose faces you never saw, and it was always a mystery, and it was always like, oh, no, you're wearing a mask, or you never saw Dr. Doom's face, and you never saw Snake Eyes' face, and Destro and Cobra Commander, and a lot of them were G.I. Joe, but they were around, and it was cool because there was a little bit of a mystery to the character. Yeah. We're in an age of comics where there's no mystery left. Everything has been explained.
Well, and everything is to be in a movie where it's going to be their faces because actors and stuff. That's a big part of it, too. I would say that little sequence was the one part of the book that I got the most lost on. Like, I had to go back and I had to look up what Taskmaster's name is, which is Masters, which I didn't know.
Is it really?
Yeah, it's Tony Masters. And so I was like, well, wait, who's saying that? And he calls him Fisk, but another point he calls him Willy. And I was like, what? You know, I figured it out. And then he does actually get his heroic take. Because he looks like he's abandoned the team. He got his money. Who cares? So what? It's all about
the Han Solo moves.
Yeah, it's all about making, that's totally what he did, making Wilson Fisk look like he had a part or was the ultimate cause of saving the Earth. It wasn't really about saving the Earth, which I thought was a very cynical, if not sort of brilliant, sort of comic book storytelling. Right. And it is really the kind of thing that I think that appeals to readers like you and I who like comics, but maybe are feeling a little left behind by what is happening in some of the main books. It's just this thing like this is, I feel like this is for us a little bit in that way. The same way that, you know, Old Man Hawkeye was, or, you know, these fringe things that we keep sort of getting. And I think for a while, like, these kind of books were the mainstream of Marvel and DC, and they're not anymore. And that's kind of okay. But so when they come along like this, and I was like, I don't want to make this the pick again. But, I mean, there was only one other book.
But they put the sunglasses on Bernie, and they dance and run the party, and what are you going to do?
You know, there was some great Batroc stuff in here. If I was just going, there was one really great leap where he was like, hold that guy. He jumped off his face into the air. I don't know. There was a real irreverence to this that I really enjoyed. You know, it reminds me of the Sinister Six book or the Spear of Foes of Spider-Man, or, you know, just those kind of things. I think, you know, Rosenberg was just delighting in this, and Juan Ferreira really, I mean, it was gorgeous art, coloring all across the board. Really.
The story was great, but that's one of the big stories of this miniseries is with the Juan Ferreira.
Also, I think that, you know, I read a whole miniseries about Star, and I kind of enjoyed it, but I don't think I knew her half as well as I did at the end of this.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like this had a really good handle on that character using what had been done before. And I know that Kelly Thompson had told me that, you know, her and Matt Rosenberg talk a lot and are relatively close. So I feel like there was a nice little synergy there where he took that character that she had been working on. And I think he fleshed her out more in a way that really worked for this series, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun.
We talked before about, you know, we don't love heroic villains generally, but These characters particularly live in not a gray area, because Taskmaster's a villain, but mm-hmm.
He's Batch a mercenary. He just doesn't Batch care. Batchrock's
a mercenary.
Yeah.
Taskmaster's a mercenary. Star started as a hero, became a villain, can go either way. I don't know about Nightmare, but...
But they're all still they're those kind of villains, like they're in it for themselves and they don't really, are kind of amoral in a way that you're the other one.
Deathstroke.
Yeah, him. Kind of there. They're not necessarily evil, and they're not trying to harm people. I think that the Grim Reaper guy is. I think he's the one evil guy, or at least he's the chaotic loose cannon. So it kind of works in that way.
Well, none of these people are trying to take over the Earth, None of these people are... None of these people are Dr. Doom.
They just want to buy the island.
Yeah, they're mercs.
Yeah, which is not the same stretch as they're kind of doing the right thing for other people and thinking about it. Star definitely is on the, we can't leave these people here to die. Fine. Mm. But it's not exactly the same as Harley Quinn more or less joining the Justice League at this point.
Right.
Right. That's a big stretch.
Right. It's Harley Quinn and the Suicide Squad, which is what they've been doing. Yes.
And this is the Suicide Squad. They even make a joke about it at one point. Or some kind of suicide team.
It was funny. It was very funny.
We've talked about it, but it was great.
I enjoyed it. And if they want to do more, great. If they never do more with this team, also great. Because the final image is a great ending image.
Totally. Yeah. It'd be hard to live up to. Overall, it's really funny. Just
looking at the sentry.
He's holding his hair.
And he's got...
He looks like a dead little girl.
He's got his thumb up, like he's giving a thumbs up, but it's just...
I hadn't noticed that. That's real good.
Boy.
Oh, it's very good. The King in Black now thing is starting to get kind of long in the tooth.
Well, it's been happening since 1972.
I think so. And the whole time I'm like, this still looks all pretty hopeless.
And the thing is, I keep looking at the checklist and it doesn't get any shorter.
No. No,
it says the conclusion's coming, but I don't know when that's going to be.
Doesn't feel like there's been any kind of advancement or wrap up anyway. It's just people walking around going, this is real bad.
Yeah.
My runner up was Runaways number 34. And I'm 34 issues into this thing. And it's been a heck of a lot of fun to be with this team the whole time. In this one, I actually don't know this character's name. Is it Pixie? There's an X-Men character, X-Men, Wolverine and Pixie. She's some fairy magic character with wings and pink hair. Mm. They respond. They come to the hostel and they say, we got a letter from a kid who said they were in trouble. And then we got a second letter that said, everything's fine here. We're all fine. How are you? And so they went to investigate it. And they thought that Molly had sent them a letter because she wants to go to Krakoa. And people were like, is she even a mutant? I don't know. And then a thing happens and all of the Runaways and the X-Men then have to go investigate something else together. And Wolverine is put out. And that was kind of the deal. And I just... Rainbow Rowell has been the writer on this from the start.
Right.
And because of that, because it lives a little to the side... it's not at all. There's no King in Black in this one. And the characterization has just gotten, and she's a YA author, like a novelist. And so, really good long-term character and interpersonal stuff that goes on through here. Everybody's got their issues going on. They're trying to, they get along, but people are having grumpy days and people are rolling their eyes at each other. And it's just been a lot of fun. And there's some of that wacky stuff through here. I don't know if I don't remember. There was the big, the Gibberum, the big guy who hungered for souls. He's not in it anymore. I forget why, but there's a Doombot who lives there and he's kind of like the butler, and Wolverine's very off put by that. There's a wonderful sequence on the first page where Wolverine walks in holding Molly, who seems to be aging slightly, over his shoulder and she wants to tell something to somebody. And she goes, hang on. And then there's this cool three-panel thing where she jumps over off of Wolverine, picks him up, and flings him over her shoulder. She goes, okay. And then she can start talking because she didn't like being held by him. And it was a really nice sort of single-page storytelling bit. It was also very nicely character-based.
Is this little runty Wolverine?
Yeah, he is. He's quite squat. And it's pretty great. Yeah. The only thing that this sort of, this is André Genelet, and it had been Chris Anka for a while, but it's a pretty good transition. I think I like the colors a lot too. It's Dean Cunniff. Really good looking, fun book. The facial acting is fantastic. And, you know, the thing that came out of it though was like, I was like, what the fuck's going on with Wolverine? Just across the line. He was the guy, and now he's not. And
it's interesting.
As a result of that, I have no idea who this character is supposed to be right now. Like in some of the X-Men books, he seems like he's gone full zealot, which feels incredibly against the character to me. And in this one, he's pretty much the Wolverine that we've known to come and love. You know, and then in the other books, he's like, I'm not an Avenger anymore. And I was like, well, again, that doesn't seem like, I don't know, like no one knows who Wolverine is right now or who he's supposed to be in whatever this climate is at Marvel.
I'd be interested to know if he's still a character that can move books. Probably. Like in terms of guest appearances. You know, it used to be you put Wolverine on a cover and a book would sell. I'm curious if that's still the case or not.
I bet he sells series, and he's certainly on the cover of this, but I'm wondering, I don't know if I have a good point of view on it, because we read digital now, so it's not like I go into a store and look at the shelves and go, oh, Wolverine. I would probably, but I don't know if we're not typical either. Like, I would probably notice him. Hey, Wolverine's on there. I wouldn't buy one, but there are people who would because he's in there.
Yeah, I just don't know if that's still a thing, how the world works, you know?
No, I understand. We know that that's not the way that let artists and writer names work anymore.
Right.
I wonder if that works with characters. It's a very good question.
Well, we can pretend.
It was a good book. It was really fun. It didn't end up being pick of the week because of the Taskmaster corpse, but also just, you know, it was just a really good time. I was like, oh, this book's still around. I think I missed the last issue. But, you know, I've been really pleased with this series all the way through. 34 issues is not nothing. That's a big deal now.
Yeah, for sure. I'm surprised they haven't started over in a volume.
Good.
America Chavez, Made in the USA, number one. This is similar to Runaways for me in that, you know, there was a early 2000s, a bunch of new characters came through Marvel, Runaways, and then the Young Avengers. And America Chavez was in the second wave of Young Avengers, because she wasn't in that original team, right?
You know what? I don't know where she came on from. I first noticed her in Kieran Gillen and Jamie McKelvey's Young Avengers, but I believe she was created by Joe Casey at some earlier point.
Yeah.
But
I don't know where she came from originally. But I wasn't really originally going to read this, because she's like a character like, oh, I don't really know much. I don't really have an affinity for her in one way or another.
I want to like her, but every time I've read it, I don't really care.
So then it was like, you know, I had six books. And I was like, well, give it a shot. And I actually really enjoyed it. There was a couple of things that, like she teams up with Spider-Man. Spider-Man at one point speaks in internet acronyms, and I twitched my face. But other than that, I thought it was a really good character piece. I don't really know anything about her. So this is sort of a introduction to you. We see her origin, which I didn't. No, I mean, she came from another dimension. She's got dimension power. She punches holes in the walls of the dimensions. But here we see her when she landed in Jones Beach, New York, as a kid, and is basically Superman. She's raised by this family in Washington Heights, and as we flash forward to her teaming up with Kate on a mission to fight giant mole rats
or something. Mole. Yeah,
and then that has an adventure. It was funny, and then has an adventure with Spider-Man at home when her neighborhood catches on fire. Like, I just thought it was a solid superhero book that did a lot to help me understand the character, who I didn't know before.
Yeah,
and I don't know who Kalina Vasquez is, the writer, or Carlos Gomez, but they were both really good. Like, Carlos Gomez looks like a super pro comic artist. I don't know who he's been on before.
Mostly,
but,
there's a couple. I don't like how he drew Hawkeye at all in the bow. I was like, you don't know how to draw a bow. Her wrist's all crooked and. That's the only thing I noticed.
I think that's a problem a lot of artists have.
Yes, it just stuck out to me on this because I think the rest of the pages were really nice, and mm-hmm. He's got a really nice body shapes being like variants in body shapes. There's different types of people, which I really like, and I think there's also some really nice stuff. He drew America Vasquez or Chavez. Sorry, he drew America Chavez really well.
Yeah.
Just with a lot of sort of. moods and statures and sort of, you know, how she looks when she's in fight and angry mode and how she's standing with her posture and then how she's looking sort of with her girlfriend in the bedroom where she's, you know, much more vulnerable looking, and that was really good.
Yeah, it was a fun superhero comic.
Yeah.
You know, I thought it was it did a really good job of telling character through action. You know, there was a lot going on. There's a big fight in the middle, there's a big fight at the end, there's a big, you know, so there was a lot of stuff packed into 20 pages, I thought. And I thought it was really fun. So I'm going to finish this miniseries probably, as we learn, as someone is stalking her or attacking her family or after her. We don't know. Some mysteriously cloaked person who looks kind of like Moon Knight, but it's definitely not Moon Knight.
There's definitely a relatively high Gosh rating when mixed with a modern sort of superhero that isn't one of the classic ones.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Spider-Man would speak in acronyms, but that's just me and being an old man.
I mean, he might have been trying to, like, if you read it like he's being sarcastic and trying to connect with the youths.
Okay, that's fine. So this week we had
the thing is, like, Spider-Man would definitely be like a mid-millennial now.
Right.
You have to know that.
This week we had a very crazy patron pick voting, which we're going to get to later, but where a lot of books were in the running, and one of the books that would end up being tied for the win, but did not win based on the coin toss, was Berserker, number one from Boom Studios.
With no vowels.
Written by Keanu Reeves and Matt Kent, but mostly Matt Kent, with art by Ron Garney and Bill Crabtree and Clem Robbins. And I read this because for a while it was leading the voting, so I thought I'd get ahead of it, but then it didn't end up winning. But I'm glad I did, because I think there's some interesting things to talk about here.
I had expected to hate it, mm-hmm. and I was kind of surprised to not hate it. And at the end,
Berserker,
I think I kind of liked it, but with caveats.
Yeah, it was weird. I about halfway through, I was like, okay. So, and I'll explain what happened. So you can understand why I said okay. Like the it opens up with Keanu Reeves's character, who's drawn to be Keanu Reeves, on a mission. He's a soldier within the American Army, and he jumps out of the helicopter without a parachute, and they're on a mission in some South American country to grab the president, and he just proceeds to kill everyone in increasingly horrific fashion. Mm-hmm. You know, guns and knives, and then he punches through skulls, and then he pulls out a guy's rib and stabs other guys with that guy's rib, and it just gets, it's just, so at that point I was like, okay.
I gotta
so
say, this is just part of the appeal early on was like, well, I guess this is gonna go fast. There's no words.
it was like 15 pages of that. I was like, okay, so he pulls the guy's arm off, he beats another guy with the arm. Sure, all right, fine. But then it got a little interesting towards the end, where it's, you know, he doesn't follow orders. He doesn't kidnap the president. He ends up killing him, and then they bring him. He gets really messed up in the fight. There's a whole chase with the van. He gets his nose blown off, and then the van crashes, and then a grenade goes off, and he's missing his hand, and his body's all messed up. So they take him back, and they start like sort of rebuilding him with cloned parts, and we find out that there's a real neurological condition where you remember every day of your life as if it was yesterday. Mary Lou Henner, the actress, has it. There's only a handful of people that have it in the world that they know about, but it's a real condition. And so he has it. But the twist is that he's been alive for 8,000 years. 80,000 years, sorry. He was like a barbarian. And he remembers every day of his life down to the day he was born, which I don't believe the real condition does that. But kind of interesting.
Kind of interesting. Here's my thoughts. This is Lazarus, but without plot.
Yeah, I thought that too.
And if I was Greg Rucka, I'd been like, two, you know, you just said they rebuilt him with clone parts of other things. Like, there was a lot of that here. I was like, oh, there's some Deadpool here. There's Lazarus. There's whatever. So there was nothing terribly original. It right down to the bit where, like, the final page turn is, I remember 80,000 years ago. And I was like, oh, okay. That said, man, Ron Garney is great.
That was the draw. That's why I read it first.
100%.
Okay, well.
And not only that, but it wasn't so Ron Garney was really big deal in the late 90s, early 2000s part when Connor and I you know, really, you know, we started around the time we started iFanboy. He was a person who like totally excited me when I see him in a book. I think of him doing Captain America, and you know, hasn't lost a step. This is gorgeous. I don't know why he's not one of the. He should be one of the top, you know, artists now. Like, that's how good I thought this was.
It's incredible. The pages are just bursting with detail and this environment.
There's a whole sort of Frank Miller like. Inking thing that's going on. Yeah,
he's been doing that. I want to say lately, but to me, 15 it's probably the last 10 years, 15 years. Yeah. But he does very heavy inks, which I like.
Looks so good. It's so all the lines and everything are impressionistic. You know, it's you know, when I first started off, I was like, well, this is definitely Keanu Reeves's vehicle. But you know, really great likeness of Keanu Reeves that wasn't creepy, but you knew exactly who he was. You know, great action sequences, really bold sort of, you know, panel composition. You know, it was like, I thought it was an art tour de force, even if like I wasn't really super into the story. He destroyed it. I was like, this is, you know, we'll talk about Michael Lark, you know, but this is along those same lines, but a little looser, you know, a little more impressionistic, I think. It's gorgeous. Yeah. I was blown away.
Great action sequences. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of times where he uses inverts the color, and I mean he doesn't do the color, but
Bill Crabtree killed it on the colors too.
He inverts the negative space, and it was a lot going on here, and in a great way,
and like no shortcuts. Impressive. As you look through the pages, just everything was filled and maximized, textures and everything.
So here's the question: are you going to stick with it?
Yes. Accepting ahead of time that I probably am not going to care about the story one bit.
Mm.
I mean, clearly, never has there been a thing that is more boldly a film pitch done in comic book form, but they did it really well. You know,
Berserker.
With no vowels. That's important. If you're listening to this, there's no vowels in that word. You know, it's super goofy, and it's funny because I tended to for a long time. I tended to think of Keanu Reeves as sort of the intellectual behind the guy. And I was like, there's none of that here. You know what I mean? Like, there's
he
no
likes
sort of
action movies.
That's fine. He's got him and Liam Neeson have been like, fuck it, lean in. You know?
Yeah. Like The Avengers 43, which is, this is part 4 of Enter the Phoenix. And I liked 42.
Yeah.
I didn't like this one.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm lost. I can't quite wrap my head around. This is another example of the Wolverine thing. Like, the guy in here is an asshole. And Jason Aaron wrote him in the X-Men Academy book or whatever that was called a while ago. And he was
Wolverine
great.
And the X-Men.
You know, so it's like a completely different sort of guy. And I just don't I don't fully understand the dueling situation where, like, they have to fight. And if they don't, like, if they're going to kill the other person or they won't lay down. I don't know. I don't know the rules. And I feel
for me, the problem is that there's a lot of extra characters. So, like, it's not just the Avengers. And I need some title cards because they're not wearing their costumes.
Yes,
they're
that's a good point.
Modified Phoenix suits. So, like, okay, it was Black Panther fighting Wolverine in the beginning. I got that. But then at one point in the middle, it was Jane Foster, but I didn't know it was Jane Foster. I thought it was somebody else. I thought it was Captain Marvel because she and Jane were sad about fighting each other. And then I was like, oh, no, this is Jane Foster. And then there was another part where some other character, and I was like, who is – oh, on page 11 of your digital reader, I was like, who are these people? Oh, it's kind of Black Knight, but who's the woman? Like, I didn't know – like, I just didn't know who anybody was.
Right. He says Red Widow, but then I don't really remember who that is either.
Like, who is that?
And then there's a thing where they pull them out. So then they pull Black Knight out. Like, I don't know where they are. I guess they're in this crater that's in near Avengers Mountain. I just realized that looking at it. I'm kind of lost. And the only real problem here is that, like, the last one was really fun. And this is just kind of more of the same of that to a certain extent. Like, I don't know that we got anywhere other than this other storyline where Phoenix is Thor's mother that I don't fully understand.
Yeah. Yeah, well, they've had the whole thing, and they've been in the whole Savage Avengers where Phoenix and Odin were banging. So maybe that's why. I don't necessarily really care about that, but it's been 43 issues. Might be time for a new creative team.
I will say, I thought the art was pretty great. A lot of designing that had to go on, a lot of big action. If you look at page 18 on the digital reader, which is Namor and Captain America having a conversation, I really like everything that's going on there. The posturing, the facial stuff. I love when you can see Captain America's eyebrows under his mask. I'm not sure why. It doesn't always work. But when it does, I feel like it's very humanizing and it sort of makes him feel more real. Like the Batman mask in real life doesn't work like that. So when they do that, it kind of works. And clearly, the next cover says Enter the Phoenix, and that is a woman's silhouette. So
Namor getting Cap's face with his finger was great.
Yeah, beautiful page.
That was good, yeah.
You know, Cap got his fists balled up. I think his arms are too short. But besides that, yeah, that first panel on that page is great, though. That look on Namor's face. I can't quite name what it would be, but he's like gritting his, he's all tightened up. It's really nice.
Right.
So there's things to like about it. I don't think it's bad, but it was a little bombastic, I think, with no point. Not no point, but I don't know what the point is. I didn't hate it, but I was like, all right, move along. Hey, at least there's not black goo everywhere. You know?
True.
It's just orange fire. At least it had a different feeling. There's orange fire everywhere because an omnipotent space being has shown up and forced people to do things they didn't want to. Whereas in the other books, an omnipotent space being has showed up and forced things they didn't want to, but it's dark colored. So you can see. But the thing is in this book, everything goes back to stuff that happened a long, long time ago that's been going on all this time that nobody ever knew about. Whereas in King in Black, but then the plants invade. And the thing is, they've been there all along, too. And this goes back. Stop, blah, 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 spider totem.
Right. Mm-hmm.
If you like what this is, if you like what's happening here, you thought, oh, man, this is good stuff. How can I get involved? How can I make sure that this is a ongoing concern of health? Well, you'd want to go to patreon.com/ifanboy. The patrons have unlocked many things that keep me up at night, such as the patron pick, the talk explodes, the book explodes, the media explodes, all the video shows going back up to YouTube, and monthly patron hangouts. Those are all things that many people have probably taken for granted at this point, myself included. Like, these are just the reality, but that's how much more stuff is happening on a very regular basis that wasn't, and that is all about those patrons, and I think that's a big deal. The next stretch goal is going to be a new show that looks at the 80s G.I. Joe cartoon one episode at a time, and the next goal after that is barbecue video shows on a quarterly basis, however the hell that works. If it does, patrons also have the iFanboy Patron Facebook group and the iFanboy Patron Discord servers, which are both sort of return to the fun communities that we had in the past, and we show up when we can. I forget that it exists, and not in a, like, it's dumb. I turn it on, I go, oh, it's there, and then I end up spending way too much time on it, and then I quit it, and then I forget to turn it back on, which is a thing, and I'm sorry. I'll show up more. There's Threadless, ifanboy.threadless.com. There are 8 t-shirt and sweatshirt and tank top and, I don't know, underwear. There's designs that we have made that refer to things from this show that we thought were clever or funny over the vast history of this time.
They made us laugh.
That's the most we can say. We can certainly, with the GDAT shirt, we can say that. We made us laugh. But, and it did. It still does. Every time I see the GDAT design, I laugh. And I don't think, it's not our highest seller.
It's our lowest seller.
Yes, it is. Yeah. But that's for us. The other ones can be for you. That's fine.
Taking it back. Taking them all back. One's for me.
There's other stuff there that you can get stuff on that's kind of cool and fun. If you don't want to deal with any of that, if you just are like, hey, can I drop something in the tip jar? You can go to ifanboy.com/support. You'll find a PayPal link there. And then finally, ifanboy.com/Amazon, where you will find a general link to Amazon. And there's always a link to buy the Booksload books and the Pick of the Week books that we put in there. And we've recently convinced them that we are not linking to porn sites because they thought we were. And we had to be very, very clear and direct. No, we are not a pornography site. Trust us. Here's a picture of me. So that's sorted out. That's some behind the scenes action for you. Thank you to everybody who does any of those things. It's not required, but it is always appreciated. And appreciated is not a strong enough word as far as I'm concerned. Let's move along.
Infinite Frontier number 0. This is the preview book for the new status quo of DC Comics. And For the most part, I enjoyed it. There are some things I don't like, but that's just going to be the case of any kind of new reboot and continuity thing. Did you read this?
Let me look, and I'll tell you exactly what page I made it to. It is page 24, which is Green Lantern coming out to his daughter, I guess.
Yeah.
And I want to be clear. That's not why I stopped reading it. I had started skimming a long time before that.
Right.
I tried. I really tried. But I was like, I don't know what my starting point for this is. I was like, is this all future state stuff or is this what it was before future
state? This is post future state leading into the new continuity.
Okay, but this is
setting everything up for you.
This does start from the position of future state.
Well, so that's what's all fucked up, and I don't think they should have ever done Future State. So,
well, obviously.
And I don't want to spend too much time on this, but no. Like the New 52 reboot, where they didn't actually do a full reboot and some things lingered, that's the case here. So, like, Batman seems to be leading towards Future State, where they're introducing the Magistrate, and right. Bruce is poor, and the stuff that makes... I hate the Batman's continuity so much. I can't remember the last time I hated the state of Batman, but I really do. But the other things are relatively new. Well, not new, but sort of resets. You know, I think Green Arrow and Black Canary, that was great with Alex Maleev art. And the Flash, they're basically sending Barry to join this multiverse team while Wally becomes the Flash of Earth again. And, you know, there are things that are... Justice League seems to be a pretty good read, but I'm really excited for Bendis and Marquez. That might be my favorite part of the issue. And
there was a couple of pages there that Jamal Igel drew of Superman.
Yeah.
Those looked great. Yeah. That only went for three pages, and I was like, I want more of that one right there.
Yeah, so I mean, some things are sticking around. You know, the Wonder Girl from Future State sticking around. Obviously the Batman continuity, but other things just seems to be like it's restarting over fresh, you know. Mm-hmm. Stargirl is very much from the TV show, it's written by Geoff Johns, who does the TV show. So that's that. It's a mishmash.
I read about one issue worth of stuff, and I was like, I got nothing to grab onto here, and it's only going to get worse. So I just bailed.
It's a preview.
It's
a preview.
Yeah.
So,
and I'll let the books speak for themselves when it's time. But I was like, I'm not going to get anything out of this, so it's fine.
Man, the Dave Marquez bit, so beautiful.
Yeah.
The Justice League bit at the beginning.
He's come a hell of a long way.
I did enjoy that they're trying to make Shazadam work, and yep. Superman keeps going, no, Black Adam. No, Shazadam. No, this is Black Adam. So I don't know how meta that is, but... And then the whole wraparound story is that the quintessence wants Wonder Woman to ascend to join them, and she chooses not to. She chooses to return to Earth.
Right.
Oh, but you did miss the big reveal at the very end.
Go ahead.
Which is a spoiler warning, which is that...
Wally.
Just jump to the last page on your digital reader, Josh. Page 61.
I locked the screen. I can't... Okay.
Oh. The return of Kirby Darkseid. With the Kirby outfit the Kirby dots, and he kills the whole quintessence, which is like Phantom Stranger and Gambit and Spectre. I mean, they're not really dead, but
nice.
And the Monitor. But it's like the tradition.
Is that Romita?
Yeah.
Okay. It's the right
traditional, guy. Yeah, traditional sort of Kirby esque with the big knee boots and the helmet and the Kirby dots everywhere. So, returning sort of Darkseid as the big bad of the DC universe.
That's all right.
So I'm hopeful there'll be things that I'll enjoy. There's a lot of things I don't enjoy. I really cannot express how much I hate the new Batman world. I mean, we had the first issue of the new Batman continuity in this week, mm-hmm. and I hated it. So
this is interesting, as you have not bought Batman in a very long time.
Oh, I'm going to keep buying it.
I know.
Come on.
I know.
But we'll get to that another time. We don't have time. We got to move on to other books.
Yeah. So I read Nocterra number one. Partially mm-hmm. because I thought this will probably be this patron pick. Wasn't. This is a new creator-owned series by Scott Snyder and Tony S. Daniel, with colors by Tomo Murray and letters by And World Design. And I never feel like giving credit to a company like I do a person. I'm just going to be honest
right.
about that. Anyway, this is another post-apocalyptic sci-fi kind of thing where the world is over and there's one woman who has a thing going on. And I liked it more than I thought I would. I think it was a very pretty strong example of this incredibly overwrought genre.
Also overdone right now.
What?
Just overdone right
that's
now.
That's what I mean. I feel like that's what Image does now. And that's what a lot of sort of the, side miniseries out of the big two are. And that's what Dark Horse does. That's what everybody does. But I didn't think it was terrible. I liked it. I don't really like Tony S. Daniel as an artist, but more so I don't like the designs, like the design of the costume. I don't know why there is a costume. I don't like it. Kind of doesn't make sense. But I was intrigued. I've read most of these and most of them I don't finish, and I did finish this one and I was kind of surprised by that. I think the cover belies something that's probably better than what is inside.
Would you read more of it?
What's inside. Maybe. It was like a week like this. Yes. If it was like 26 weeks, I could, or 26 books in a week, I could see it going.
I see.
A lot of talking. That's kind of a thing.
I'm very curious why you put King in Black, Captain America, number one, the one shot on here. I made it about a third of the way through this and stopped.
Yeah. So I don't often like to put up something that wasn't very good and talk about it, but this wasn't
usually
very good.
To focus on the good stuff. This
yeah,
was not
but
good.
This was in such a way that I literally thought, why, how did this get made? And it was a version of Captain America who had been taken over by Null, and they got him out, but Null is still in his head, and it's causing him to doubt himself. And it wasn't Captain. It was like this doesn't fit with Captain America at all. It was so not a good book, and so like, you know, we talk a lot about the artists. You know, like, how did this, why is this artist working professionally now? And I don't remember, I'm not talking about this artist, but I just mean, but this was the thing where I was like, how did this script get through? This script just feels out of place with everything. It feels like it's a bad take on Captain America. I didn't learn anything from it. Falcon's outfit's awful. That's beside the point. There is one page in here, though, page 6 on the digital reader. It's basically where Captain America jumps into frame, and it's a beautiful drawing. He's like, it's a canted angle. He's up against a building. It's a 2-page spread, and he's just flying through, and his pirate boots are in real good shape. I liked that page. Other than that, it was out of place enough that I had to actually call it out. And also there was, the artist was Mirko Kolak, one of the artists, and that's him. And those pages that he did were pretty good. But then there was like a bunch of other artists whose names we've seen, Stefano Landini, Roge Antonio, who was most recently on some of those Deceased books. And Nico Leon, who I've seen, I can't remember exactly who all those people are, but I know I've seen them around. But as a sort of group of people, it was a little disjointed.
I don't think I made it to the other artists, honestly.
Yeah,
I just bailed. I pulled the ripcord on it.
Yeah, no, it's fine. I thought, how could you, this has to, and it kept getting worse. And then I was like, I guess I'm finishing this. You know, like I was just baffled by it, I think. So.
The Swamp Thing, number one, from Ram V and Mike Perkins, who were the team on the Future State Swamp Thing book. Nope. This is the other Infinite Frontier. So we had two books, Batman 106 and The Swamp Thing, number one, were both in the new DC continuity. You put this on the list.
I did put this on the list. I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't follow the news of comics and what is supposed to be going on with the line and this and that, and you're just reading comics, you're going to be fucking confused all the time, because I am. I thought, it's a new Swamp Thing book. I'll get that. Now, I don't expect things to always be the same, and I adjust, and I moved in. I was like, okay, this is what Swamp Thing is. But if you're just like, I just want to buy some comics, you'd be, what the hell is this? Why is this happening? Is everything else worlds all the time? And the answer is yes. And I find it so annoying. Like, I want it to be better. Like, hey, it's an all new Swamp Thing. Just put that on there like they used to. At least you know it's a thing. But it's just confusing. And nothing it's a further thing that comics are being made for people who constantly read comics headlines and shit on Twitter or whatever. Like, that's...
Comics is a problem. The same thing that the general media world has a problem is that the people making the things live so much on the internet, and they think that everyone else does as well, and they don't. Some people do, but not everyone does. And so the people who don't they're not being catered to. They're catering to the people that live on Twitter all day long.
Well, it's in you know, however many, been the last 10, 20 years, certainly the first part of the 2000s, the conversation was constantly about, like, how do we get new readers? How do we, you know, open things up? And it feels like we've closed things. We've made it even more insular. It's the exact opposite of what needed to happen. And it did. And it's like weird because comics have never been such a big part of culture while still being so obtuse and you know, opaque and hard to get through. So
the larger story that you were confused is that what was it that confused you about this?
Nothing.
I'm just curious, I had to get acclimated.
I was like, oh, this has nothing to do with Alec Holland, and it's not connected to anything that I know anything about. Once I sort of understood that, I was fine. I didn't really care so much about the story. It wasn't very compelling, but I did think that the combination of Mike Perkins and Mike Spicer, beautiful Mike artwork. Perkins. There was some really, really great artwork in here, and I was super impressed by that the whole time. It got me through. It did have sort of the tone of if you read the early Alan Moore Swamp Things, where on those you don't really know what's going on or what's happening. There was a lot of that sort of body horror mystery stuff going on there that I think tone-wise it was very much where Swamp Thing used to be. It just was discombobulating at the beginning. And that whole thing wasn't so much a complaint about this book, just as an overall thing that seems to be happening constantly. It's the same thing with you know, Infinite Frontier. Like, if you're going to introduce a bunch of stuff to me to Zero, then I shouldn't feel completely lost a couple of pages in. And I did.
I do think that Future State was a mistake. I think that really muddled it for people who aren't paying attention. You know, it's like you wiped this slate clean, started these new books, and then you wiped those books away and started new books a month later. It was very, I think if you're not paying attention, it's very confusing.
But the thing is this, but we read the Future State books to a certain extent. You did. When you wipe the slate clean, that means that when you start, it shouldn't be confusing, and it was confusing as hell. It was not, it's just not respectful of the reader, I don't think.
It's a head scratching publishing strategy right now at DC.
Yes.
But it has been for a while.
Beautiful book though.
We talked about, you know, Mike Perkins is just weird enough. Yeah. And so for a character like Swamp Thing, it's perfect.
He is perfect for this. You know, and you know, the story, this wasn't confusing. This wasn't difficult. It's just how it fits into everything. You know, I didn't necessarily love it, but it's a different take on everything. We'll see where it goes. I will probably read the next one.
Those are the books we want to talk about. Could have talked about some more, but those are the ones we chose. Patron pick is time is well. Patron pick is now. It's the time for the patron pick. We need a little jingle. Patreon.com/iFanboys, where you go vote at a book to run down. Every week, we've been having more and more people vote, which is great. We had the highest number of patrons voted ever this week. It keeps going up, and I do appreciate it. It gets to be more interesting because this week we had a 5-book race. That's why Josh and I ended up reading The Berserker and Noctera, because we didn't know where it was going to go. And so it was exciting. But the winner, by coin toss, it tied Dead Dogs Bite and Berserker both tied. And by coin toss, Dead Dogs Bite number one from Dark Horse Comics 1. Story and art by Tyler Boss.
But we came through anyway.
Who you may recall was the artist on Four Kids Walk in a Bank, which is the book that got Matthew Rosenberg his Marvel gigs. And then I don't even know if that book ever finished. Maybe it did. So this is a crime book, and I would describe it as very it's got a heavy dose of Twin Peaks in it, in that there's a very serious crime of a missing girl, but in this town that's full of sort of whimsical and maybe fantastical elements, and not in a over the top way, just in like what the hell's going on kind of way. And it also has a Rod Serling-esque narrator, which I did enjoy that device for some reason, but I thought it was fun.
Yeah. I think those first two pages where that guy comes on, there's just basically a 9-page grid, static shot of a street, you know, straight down the middle. You know, the guy comes out of the sewer after a car drives by and talks. He does that for 2 pages. Then you get a blank final panel on that. I thought that was really cool. I think the design of this was really nice. I really like the style of cartooning incredibly. I think it was too clever by a quarter because I was kind of lost. The girl who's missing is literally named Cormac Guffin. So she's the MacGuffin. I wasn't really sure what to hang on to other than this main girl has a couple of relationships with people that were interesting and I understood what was going on. So there were nice scenes, but I failed to connect everything to know what I'm reading.
Yeah, I liked it. I didn't love it. I liked it a lot. I love the art. It's terrific. Tyler Voss is terrific. He's very much in the sort of Steve Lieber, Michael Lark school, which I love. It's a little bit, but it's a little confusing, but I thought there was a really great character moments here, even if
yes,
it did play into the whimsy, perhaps slightly too much. There's really great moments. Like she's being harassed by these guys. She pulls a gun on them. They run away. And then her friend, she's like, why do you have a gun? And she's like, what? Oh, right. And then squirts him with it. I thought that the body language and the acting in those three panels were terrific.
Totally.
And then there's a couple making out at, or trying to make out at Lover's Lane, and they knock on the window, and there's just a really funny panel where the girl's looking up and the guy's underneath her, and it was the art there was funny too. It's just, there's really great moments in here.
Yes, there was. And this is like, if you saw these in like a movie trailer, you'd be like, that's interesting. The whole thing in the pharmacy. Yeah.
So there's enough here that I'm very interested. I do think this was fun. I enjoyed reading it. There's a lot also where I was like, why is the woman at the town hall meeting dressed in a superhero costume? Like, that's weird.
Yes.
That didn't really fit the rest of the book, you know. But I'm going with it because I like the art a lot. I think there's great moments here. I don't know if Tyler Boss has written comics before, but
yeah.
There was things that worked. But I do agree that there's a little bit too much of the goofiness at times.
Yeah, it needs a little more grounding for me to be able to grab onto it.
And also the last shot of them overlooking sort of the town, which ends up looking a lot like Los Angeles, but isn't. I feel like the town shouldn't be that big. Isn't that big? But you know, what do I know?
I don't know. I don't know anything about it. It's got a swirly in it. That's not normal.
Right. I think it's other than that must mean something.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so the thing is, like, I'm looking at the beginning, and there's a shot of the road leading to town. Welcome to Pender Mills. This is the same thing as Twin Peaks. Population 2,240.
Oh, yeah, that's too big.
And I don't know if that's another Twin Peaks joke, because the thing is, the Twin Peaks sign in the show said 50,000, which is what the network made him put, but he wanted it to be 5,000. He wanted it to be a super small town, but they made him put 50,000 on it.
They thought people wouldn't
watch a show about a super small town, because
that's insane.
Everyone was on cocaine back then.
Network executives are and have been the worst.
So the drawing doesn't match the sign, is what I'm saying. That's at a 2,000 person town.
Yep, that's true.
So, and these are all minor things. I thought this was fun. I did really enjoy reading it. I love the art.
I think that I have read so many books that come out and they try to be mysterious, you know, and clever, and then they don't deliver, that I've gotten to be very, very hesitant about them.
You're skeptical.
Yes, very much, because, you know, it hasn't come through a lot. Dad says he's going to come pick you up for the weekend. If he doesn't show up for the fifth weekend in a row, you're not going to believe that he's coming that weekend. And that's,
but he said we're going fishing.
It's just me, 44 years old, sitting on my front step, sad fishing pole in hand.
Josh, it's been 40 years, Josh. He's not coming. Maybe this time he will.
Yeah, like, well, I devote all my optimism to that, so I don't have any left for these comics.
Dead Dog's Bite.
This weekend we're going bowling, but
Dog's Bite number one. Ratings out of five. Ratings.
I don't think that I can go higher than a 3.
Okay, I'm gonna go 4. I did really enjoy it.
Wow, that's pretty good.
I did enjoy it. Sticking with it.
Don't know. Right now,
I think I am.
Right now, I'm like 40-60. No.
Okay.
That's not a hard no, though.
I think issue 2 will be an interesting make or break, depending on how the story goes. So I'm going to
given that, I would lean towards a yes. 60-40 the other way, then.
Yeah. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can go. Every patron can vote, but to give it the $5 or higher level, you get your own superpower live on the show. And as we mentioned last week, we found a backlog of patrons who upgraded. So we're gonna double the number of patrons on the show who get powers so that we can get through that backlog. We apologize for missing you. So we're going to do 4 this episode. Josh?
Greg Schlesinger. has a retinue, a team, a squad of five dogs of various ages, breeds, and size who he can communicate with directly and help him solve mysteries.
Help the dogs solve the mysteries? Or he
the dogs it? Help him solve mysteries.
Oh.
But they're all fully sentient speaking dogs, but only to him. Others can't see it. But you know, there's like an old floppy hound dog and then a tiny excited chihuahua and then a big fuzzy sheepdog who's kind of stupid. You know.
And they help him. They help him solve the mysteries.
Yes.
Cool.
I just pitched a cartoon show from 1984 is what I did.
You did. If you only could go back in time, you'd be a millionaire right now.
Sure.
Ryan Silberstein has fan hands, and what I mean is little blades come out of his hands and fan. Mm-hmm. Now, not enough force to lift him up, but he can cool himself and other people off around him.
That's nice.
Fan hands. He could also, I guess, maybe disperse some smoke or something, but...
Whoa.
You know.
Oh, I see like what a you're fan. Saying. Although yeah. he could also then use that to start a fire.
Yeah, possibly.
Which is,
I mean, whatever you could do with a regular sort of oscillating fan.
Oh, I had pictures like Asian fans.
No. Like okay. He literally has oscillating blades that come out of his palms.
But they don't stay there.
No.
It's like Wolverine, but fans.
Yeah.
Okay.
The size of his palms. So they're like mini oscillating fans that come out of his hands.
That's nice.
And
that's good. So I pictured him flapping his hands around and getting tired of like, I'm getting warm here. And he's like, but I'm tired. That makes more sense.
Yeah.
Are they quieter or as loud as a normal oscillating fan?
They're as loud as a normal oscillating fan. They also collect dust like an oscillating fan.
Oh my God.
Does.
How do you clean those things?
I don't know.
It's impossible.
Yeah.
Jay Hazard, on either side of the lower half of his body has a frictionless coating so that he can slide across any surface.
You love frictionless powers.
Yeah, but like he could slide across all the hoods of all cars. He could slide across the floor or anywhere. He makes a great base runner. He could slide. Any surface. He's not going to rip his pants. He's just going to slide right along his butt or hip.
But it's only, where is it on his body? You said it was the sides of his body.
Yeah, like if you were going in, you know, like if you were sliding into base foot first, or you were sliding across like a car, like TJ Hooker.
Right. Or any
that kind of position.
Hazard or anybody.
Yeah.
His name is Jay Hazard.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy? What a bit of mental connection you just made with what I said.
Can he jump his car over large crevasses?
I mean, he could, but it's not related to that thing. But if you were in like a foot chase and there was like a bar, you know, like, and he had to slide under the bar,
sure,
he could do that and not lose any speed.
Or like a giant door is closing.
Yep.
And he's got to slide under it.
Yep. You're getting it. Like, say that a huge, I don't know, stone ball was riding after him and he was holding a small statue of historical value. Yeah.
Could be gold, could be silver.
Who knows? It's about the weight of a bag of sand. And you need to get under that thing while also having time to grab
his hat. Might have come off. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
It could have happened.
Yep.
Tony Gallardo, every time he breaks a bone, it heals back harder and more dense.
All right.
So he starts getting stronger. His bones are getting stronger every time he breaks them.
You'd almost want to break them on purpose.
Right. But that's painful. And then there's recovery time. They don't heal any faster, but when they do heal, you know.
Now, if he breaks the same thing several times,
it would get harder and harder. Yeah.
All right. I wonder if there's
he could break his arm three or four times, and then he'd have a super strong arm.
Bone. I wonder if there's some sort of medical advantage or disadvantage to having like harder, more dense bones.
Well, then every time it heals, it's harder to break. So
right, but then the parts around it are then by contrast weaker.
Mm.
He's just changing the break point.
Well, eventually, if he broke everything, mm-hmm. let's say he went skiing,
okay,
and broke several bones.
Well, he should set his DIN setting lower on the bindings.
He would be. He'd come back even better.
Yeah, that's good. After years of rehab.
Right. It doesn't mean anything else. Like, he's got to go through PT and all that stuff. And it's not like, it's not magic. But when he's done, he's harder and stronger, faster, Tony, Jay, Ryan, Greg, thanks for being patrons. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's where you can join up.
I think it might be better for us that we have to do more at a given time. Mm-hmm. I have a feeling that it will lead to...
Certainly more panic on my end.
Certainly. I mean, plus we're already working with a base level of panic that we didn't think possible 10 years ago. Right. I think that we should leave this first question for the next time.
Okay.
I think it's a good conversation that we will end up adding 15 minutes to the show that we can't afford.
Greg P. from Everett, Washington writes and says, about a month ago, I read a bunch of steak recipes that didn't use a meat thermometer. Why not? Are meat thermometers cheating? Are they uncool? I thought about this for a month. About a month.
Greg. Okay.
Well, hold on.
Go ahead.
If we're just talking about steaks, is one thing. But meat thermometers are really necessary for like poultry.
Well, this is the point.
Yeah.
A meat thermometer is exactly correct for the kind of thing that you're talking about, which is a larger cut that has, you know, an area that is big enough inside to be at a certain temperature. Whereas a steak is relatively thin. And therefore, the art of the steak, as you have seen in all these recipes, does not include sticking the meat thermometer in because it doesn't work. It's too thin. It's too.
You don't need it.
You need to go by what I go by is the thumb rule, which is you press on the if you put your thumb right up against the other part of your hand and you the soft part in the it, like between in the crease, that's like rare. And the further you go out, the more done it is, and that's how you can tell how your steak is. In the old days, but
I was just saying, at the end of the day, you could eat a rare steak and be fine. But if you can't eat rare poultry and be fine. Well, you could, but you may not. So that's why the thermometer exists. I use it all the time for like when I cook a whole chicken or something. Yes. But like,
because it's hard to tell with what the outside looks like has nothing to do with what it's like nearer to the bone.
Right. But steak, I mean, it's just you cook it 8 minutes aside or 6 minutes aside, whatever you want, whatever the thickness is, and you're done because it doesn't matter what the.
Yeah.
I mean, you touch it and feel it, but like you can just sear the steak and eat it, and that's fine.
Yes,
too.
You want the crust to be nice and caramelized. You want the Maillard effect. You want that, but you don't want the inside to be cooked a lot. So that, to me, it requires a high heat. You want to quickly get the outside and try to leave the inside as untouched as possible. What I was going to say is, in the old days, the way that I learned to do it from my parents, who are, you know, they grew up in the 70s when no one knew how to cook anything, apparently, or in the 60s, was to cook the steak and then cut it and look. And now the very idea of it just...
Oh, my God.
I know. All those juices. Run out.
Why is the steak so dry?
Just press on it. The harder and tougher it is, the more cooked it is, the springier it is, you know, sort of middle. If it sticks right down, it means you haven't cooked it at all.
Yeah.
And end of story. That's
if you touch it and your fingers can meet in the middle, then you need to keep cooking it.
Well, you also need to buy a thicker steak.
Well, that's why steak recipes don't have meat thermometers, because they don't need them. You don't need them. They're designed for poultry, basically.
So if you have other things that we're not qualified to talk about, you know, in any real sense, you know, like we can act like we're qualified. You know, I read this in Esquire, which is where I learned how to cook steak, if I'm going to be honest with you. you can send those to contact at iFanboy, and we will answer. You can ask us anything. And we'll answer.
Yeah, the thing is, we have so many books to talk about. We have tons of great emails have come in over the last few weeks, but we've had even a week like this where I only had six books. I thought, wow, we're gonna get like four emails in. Nope.
Well, we got one that was good enough that we're gonna keep next week. So that's not nothing. Coming up, already had come up. The media spillage we put out last week. I've lost track of time. Mainly talked about Cobra Kai. The third season that had come out, but also the whole thing in general, and Connor's deep and abiding love of the Karate Kid movies.
Oh, yeah.
Was a surprise to me, and I know many things about it. I'm not a surprise. I mean, I thought, oh, yeah, of course, because I'm not far behind him, but it held a special place. You can hear all about that on the media spillage. That's back in the feed. Coming soon, there shall be Talksplodes. There is one that is recorded. I'm holding on it just for a little bit because of a release date. There's another one that I am scheduled to record next week, and then we will be all caught up, people. We will be good to go, but you're going to get a double dose.
Two this month.
Yep.
Two Talksplodes. And in addition to the Talksplodes, you're going to get a Booksplode. It's going to be another packed month full of special shows. In fact, this month should be four shows. We'll see what happens. The Booksplode for this month is going to be Avengers West Vision Quest by John Byrne, which collects Avengers West Coast, or West Coast Avengers, as it was called when it came out.
Yeah, they switched it.
42-50. So this is an audible. We had another book teed up. We decided we wanted to do this one. This, you know, Vision and Scarlet Witch are on everybody's mind right now, including ours. So we thought we'd go back to some classic John Byrne West Coast Avengers. And this is
the,
a very
John Byrne was important. The capper for us, though.
Oh, for sure. Like, but it's also very important of Avengers Vision story. So
yes.
as evidenced by the title Vision Quest. So look for that later this month. And also there'll be a media explode towards the very end of the month. We haven't decided on the topic yet. I just wanted to clarify, because people have asked, media explodes are for non-comics media. So if you're looking for discussions about things like WandaVision, that's not going to happen there. It's been happening on our Patreon hangouts.
Yeah.
If we're being honest. So, we don't have a topic, but as soon as we know what the topic is, we'll let you know. And yeah, so all those shows, they're at ifanboy.com. That's where you can find everything we've recorded. All of our old writing is there. Years and years and years of writing and shows are all at ifanboy.com. You can like facebook.com/ifanboy or follow at ifanboy on Twitter or at ifanboy comics on Instagram. That's where you can find what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And individually, we are CS Kilpatrick on Instagram and J.A. Flanagan on Instagram. And we also have our YouTube page, which was unlocked by the patrons, youtube.com/ifanboy. We've been uploading all of our old video shows, years and years and years of it. And we're still only on 2008. This past week, we had a mini in which Josh answered the question, just who the hell is Eric Trautman? We did a show about Image Comics, and we did a show.
What an asshole title. And he's like a friend of mine now. I know him quite well. But at the time, who are you? I want to give context. Greg Rucka was writing Checkmate, which was a great series. And the co-writer is Eric Trautman, to which we all ask, wait, who's Eric Trautman? Well, we found out.
Right. At a con. You interviewed him.
Yeah.
Image Comics, we did a show about, and then we did a show about the comics behind the movies. That's where we looked at a bunch of indie books like The Road to Perdition and History of Violence and books like that that at that point it spawned a bunch of indie films, or not indie films, but non-superhero films. So we looked at those books. These are all interesting shows from 12 years ago. And if you have never saw them, they're all available at youtube.com/ifanboy.
If you like this show, you can write a review or leave a star rating on Apple Podcasts or any of the other services that are now doing that kind of thing. You can the YouTube page, for example. You can put something on there. You can tell people about it. You can link. You can say, hey, look at these yahoos talking about Image Comics 13 years ago and how much different it is and how much better comics used to be, because that's what it's like. Hey, did you guys know they've been doing this show since they were in their 20s? Which we are not anymore. Supposedly all that time should give us some authority and qualified opinions, one would hope, but that's not for us to judge. And that's it. Thanks to everybody who's listening. Thanks to everybody who does the patron stuff and all those things. And take care of yourselves out there.
Yep.
It's, if you're in Texas, stay indoors. And that's all. We can't. It's too much. They know. If you're listening, you know. We're with you.
Groundhog Day.
Oh, it's gonna be cold out there.
Dun, 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 dun.
Don't forget your booties.
My name is Connor.
I'm Josh. Stay cool, folks.